All right. Is this thing on? Can you guys hear me? Buongiorno, everybody. Thank you. For the first time in 5 years' career outside of Italy, people answer back, buongiorno. Thank you for being here. My name is Vittore Bertocci. I am a principal architect evangelist on the Windows Azure platform evangelism team. My specific focus is identity. And hence, that's the topic I'm going to use to bore you today. No, well, hopefully not, but I'll do my best. How many of you guys saw my presentation at PDC 2010? One, two, three, four. Excellent. There are many other presentations running right now, and I would urge you to go and take advantage, because Modulo failing demos, which may always happen since yesterday I hear there was no internet, this is going to be pretty much the same but formatted for your screens. So please, when you write on the eval, don't say, hey, this is more or less the same as PDC 2010. Yes, that's the intent, because the content is more or less the same. How many of you guys know what is a claims-based identity? Hey, look at that. So the first, how many of you ever used the access control service? Much less. And how many of you ever authenticated users from a Windows mobile device? Windows phone device, I apologize with my marketing team. Okay, so for the ones of you that already know about claims, the beginning is going to be a bit of an getting on the same page again, but after that, hopefully we'll manage to differentiate a bit. And before I go ahead, am I speaking too fast? I should hear a no or a yes. No. Hey, they didn't hear any yes. Excellent. So this is the moment for telling me. Otherwise, it's like saying to your mother-in-law, yeah, I love this dish. And then every time you'll go visit, you'll get that dish. So now, if I'm speaking too fast, you have to tell me now. So, 3, 2, 1, go. Perfect. If in 1 hour and 15 minutes you will walk through those doors, or earlier if you get bored, with one message in mind, it's supposed to be that one. You have many different options, different styles, different products for managing access control. However, claims-based identity is the approach which yields the best result, both tactically and strategically. And in fact, I'll touch among various different things during this talk. However, all I will be doing will be repeating these in different form. If like my marketing guys briefed me well, you will not realize that. But in the end, the intent will be that all the time. And that said, let's see what are we going to talk about. I'm going to start with known territory. That's to say, how do we approach access control and identity management on premises? So, how many of you guys are software developers? That was a trick question for Friday morning. This is a dev days. Hello, you are all supposed to be developers. If among you there is some IT pros, just know that we love you, but this content is mainly for developers. So let's say that you are a developer. And let's say that you have been in the industry for some time before our marketing departments discovered this cloud buzzword. And so your aim is developing software that your customer will deploy on premises. So the game field is this one. There is the on-premise area, there is a data center, sometimes just a box under the desk of somebody, but data center nonetheless. There are users, there's some thing that you use on premises for managing identity, and your application targets that environment. This is a well-known, well-understood, not necessarily well-solved problem, but this is like what we know. And then let's say that you buy on our happy news of moving things to the cloud, because of course in the cloud everything is marvelous, and then you decide to take your application and start targeting the cloud. And the beginning of the presentation is going to be about this move, understanding what it entails, how you can do that without suffering too much or even earning something in the process. And then, since your application is already in the cloud, why not just going ahead and selling it to more than one customer at once? When you go on premises, that instance is for that customer. But now that it's in the cloud, as long as they can type the address on their browser, they can get there. And so we'll understand what it means to manage access when you have to deal with multiple partners, which is slightly different. And then we'll just realize that those things are droplets in one ocean of potential users. The internet is filled with people that may not have pockets as deep as your business customers there, but they have pockets nonetheless. So even if they go and they occasionally click on your ad, that's an interesting audience to cater to. And of course, the access control for those guys is going to be a different problem because you have a weaker ties, you know less about those guys. And on the other hand, you need to use less strength for authenticating those guys. So there are various differences. And we'll see that all those users belong to basically equivalent of countries, like Facebook has 700, let me say that again, 700 million users. That's a big country. And we will be able to leverage their affiliation for managing access control. And then finally, if we'll have time, I'll also touch on how to take all those considerations and make it work in a mobile environment. That is to say, assuming that you use claims-based identity on the backend, we will see how you can actually take advantage of the same infrastructure even from different clients, such as the mobile. Does that sound fair? Is there any other scenario that you would like to see beyond those? Okay, let's make a deal. I know that Belgian audiences are famous for being not very active, but you guys are not Belgian, right? You are mostly from the Netherlands. And besides, I am just coming since yesterday, and it's the third year that I present in Belgium, and they are actually fairly active. Like, they made questions, they occasionally laughed, like, oh, wow. So don't make them undo you. Please be interactive. Because if you just let me hear broadcast this, you are better off taking a video of this stuff and watching it. So take advantage of the fact that I cannot run away. If you make me a question, somehow I have to answer. So take advantage of this. Otherwise, for me, it's the same. I have those rails. I've done this a number of times. I just do it. It's for you. Deal? Ah, look at that. I got nodding. Whoa. That's progress. Okay. I hope that you really liked that slide because I put so much effort in it that I didn't really finish the rest of the deck. The rest of the deck is like this, and I'm not joking. However, if you're patient with me, we'll do this thing. We'll actually build the deck as I present it, and then once we get to the end of the presentation, I'll actually go through that again. So let's do this. Let's start from what I mentioned before. Let's say on-premises application. Let's see how it works today. Here you have your user. And here you have your on-premises app. It's interesting that there is this very detailed background which is going to interfere with my pictures, but that's fine. Here you have your data center where we put applications. And here you have your identification technology, say it directories and similar. And here there is your app. Now, how does this normally work? Well, normally, you'll have your user which is already authenticated with their system. This is the internet. So every time you want to do anything on the internet, you sit in front of your PC, you type in your... Yes, username and password. Thank you. Thank you for being here. I will keep trying for the entire hour, so you better get used to that. And then when you write your application, you need to know which technology is being used in that network so that you can take advantage of that. So the classic example is Active Directory, in which you know that Active Directory is in there, so when you write your software, you just take advantage of Windows integrated authentication. Just as easy. But despite this is like the most adopted, and rightfully so because it's awesome, but you can find also different situations in which, for example, certain products will have their own identity store. And so if you want to integrate with Voz, you need to do something. Anyway, the end result is that when your user comes to your application, they are already signed in, thanks to the fact that they were signed in there. And this works. This works because this all lives under one DOM. I don't know if you guys here have those snowballs in which there are a little scenery and there is a... And it's all nice and pretty, but it's all inside the ball. It works because there is this boundary. And within that boundary, the designer is king. If you want to do whatever, even the most stupid thing, if it's your intranet, you can do whatever you want. However, when you start moving forward, things get kind of harder. So let's grab these and let's make a slightly more interesting scenario. Let's introduce a word from our sponsor, Windows Azure. Ta-da! Voila! Here we have Windows Azure, and let's say that you believe all our, of course, let's get rid of a data center, no longer necessary. And let's say that you buy on our marketing and you move your application to the cloud and, hey, you don't have to change anything and everything will work exactly as is, right? Right? Yes. So it is mostly so. I have to be honest. It is mostly so. But for this specific detail, if we take it and we move it without changing a thing, what happens? Our user tries to get in here, cracks the DOM in the process. And my user here is a nobody. Let's say that outside of the boundary of my little snowball, my user is not authenticated. Because there, I'm likely listening for connections on HTTP, on similar protocols. There is nothing which is intrinsic in the HTTP that will mandate authentication. Whenever you have something on your intranet which opens a port and listens, the network layer takes care of that stuff, is infrastructure. But when you put stuff outside, that doesn't take place. And even if it would, the authority of this guy, of the local authority that we have in there, extends only there. As soon as you get outside, that is not an authority anymore. It's like for me pulling out my driving license in the States. My Italian driving license in the States, they laugh. They want the local one. It's not just not an authority there. So here, it's an interesting problem. Luckily, the solution is a very easy one. Well, very easy. It's a very obvious one. How many of you guys are familiar with service orientation? Some. Excellent. So this is a classic problem of service orientation in which we have one capability, authentication, which cannot be accessed beyond a certain boundary because in order to access that, you need to know the details of the implementation. So you are not hiding those details. You require your potential users to take a dependency on that. And so what do you do in this case? You call Dr. McCoy and Mr. Spock. Never fails to get a chuckle. So what do you do is that you slap a facade, you slap a contract in front of that capability, so that if somebody wants to take advantage of that, they don't need to know that that's Active Directory. They don't need to know the specific address and the ports that they need to open. They don't need to know that that's some product from competitors, which does the same as Active Directory, but works differently. You just use that contract, and thanks to that, you will be capable of authenticating users without knowing any technical detail, besides the protocol that you should use. Now, this thing is a web service, and in this context, it is a very special flavor of web service. We call it Security Token Service, or STS. How many of you guys ever heard the term? Hey, look at that. So you all know, why are you here? Like, this is an introduction. I put it in the abstract, so please don't fail me. So I'll get faster then. Then, now that I have this capability exposed, I need to make the results of my calls available outside of the boundaries of my enterprise. When I use Kerberos, the format that I'm using has a lot of references. That's to say that since we are all among friends, we have our own special language, and I don't need to put everything explicitly in the ticket that I send around. As soon as I step out of the boundaries in here, that is no longer the case. So I need a format which represents the successful outcome of one authentication operation. And that thing is the I can't hear. Vtoken! Yes, it's Vtoken. Vtoken is a bunch of bytes, be it XML, could also be binary. That's a representation, a projection of a identity of a user who just successfully authenticated, and follows a number of formats. The most popular today is SAML, but with arrays of REST, there are other formats. It has a lot of advantages, but I will not mention those here. So let's just put it here for the time being. So the last thing that we need for making this work again is a funnel. I said that HTTP does not have any middleware which enforces authentication. So what we need to do is to provide one. You just take this little piece of middleware, which could be literally very small, just like a DLL, an HTTP module, whatever lives in front of your application, and you can use that for enforcing whatever authentication protocol you want to use for enabling your scenario. So now we have everything. The flow goes now as follows. User tries to authenticate. Not authenticated, so gets redirected by the configuration of his middleware in the right place, which is his own local authority, which, by the way, we call identity provider. And if successfully authenticated, as a prize, he gets a token. And now this token gets forwarded to the application, and here it goes through the four stages of grief in which it gets stripped of its signature or its encryption, it gets deserialized. And all those things that, as a developer, unless you have very little social life, like myself, you usually don't care about. That's to say that it's the job of the infrastructure to make all those boring checks. And if everything is successful, the user is marked as authenticated, and instead of asking for the token every time, we establish a session, which typically means a cookie, exactly. And so the cookie gets in the hand of a user, which, of course, that's a smile, those are not mustache, just so we are clear. And how do we achieve this fantastic feast? Well, we have a number of products. A few years ago, you actually had to write everything by hand. We had two C# files, simplests.cs, which was an oxymoron, because a simple and STS together, they don't go, and they had tokenprocessor.cs. And they were the two things that you had to mangle and massage to achieve that. Today, that's no longer the case. If you want an identity provider out of your Active Directory, you can use Active Directory Federation Services too. That's a server role, hence completely free. You download it out of band. You can just install it on any 2008 machine as long as you have a domain from 2003 on. And basically, you can just get a checkbox. And with that checkbox, you teach to your domain controller to speak SAML, to speak WS Federation, to speak WS Trust. In other words, that we enable all these things that I'm describing. And let me make it smaller. So that thing is mainly for administrators. So we don't care about that much. And instead of a funnel, the middleware is Windows Identity Foundation. That's an extension to the .NET framework. Actually, technically, it is a part of the .NET framework, but we make it available as a separate download so that you can use it both with 4.0 and with 3.5. And that's actually what teaches Visual Studio to deal with claims, so that you can just use very simple tooling for enabling all these. And since a demo is worth and words, let's just do that. Let me show you how this works. Now, this is my only demo that doesn't really use the cloud. I'm using the local environment. So I have high hopes for this demo to work. For the rest of the thing, well, connectivity is king. Yesterday, I did this demo, which I've done perhaps, I don't know, 50 times probably. And it always worked, and the internet died on me. And I lost 10 years of life expectancy. So I'm hoping that I will not put my budget down further. But we'll see. How many of you guys ever developed on Windows Azure? Thank you for being here. Good. So what you already know, oh, I have my Zoom off. Let's turn it on right away. What is a web role? A web role is just a web application which also happens to contain some description of the app so that Windows Azure can take it and run it. And Windows Azure has this local execution environment which can simulate the cloud. So once I will hit F5 on this thing will actually run on my machine, but not on IIS. So it's just like if it would be running in the cloud. Let's say that here I want to refer to an external authority. Like, I don't want to deal with identity myself, and I don't want to use my infrastructure, because I want to be able to put this in the cloud. Actually, it's already in the cloud. So I have tools which allow me to basically configure this component to always send people here using the correct protocol when they need authentication. And this tool comes in here. When you install the SDK of Windows Identity Foundation, you get this link, this thing called Add STS Reference, which substantially allow me to specify one external service for doing authentication. Now, again, I'm not an infrastructural guy, and I am proud of it. So I don't have Active Directory in a box. I have something, well, better, let's say more handy. You have this little utility, self-STS, which is can be used for simulating Active Directory. So that's what I'm doing here. This is my little STS in a pocket, which you can just put on your machine without installing, double-click, and it will behave like an STS. Do not use it anywhere near a production machine. This is horribly, horribly insecure. That's just for testing. So let me start it. And let me copy the address of the metadata here. So now I can paste the metadata here, the description of the service. And here I get the list of the attributes, also known as claims. Thank you. Test for seeing if you were paying attention. Well, it said claims 5 times in that screen. So, yeah, but it doesn't have to be difficult every time. And in which I can see the kind of information that I can learn when I actually get my users to authenticate in there. So good. Next. Finish. Perfect. So now I can just hit F5. And now Visual Studio is going to package all these. It's going to try to access this application on a browser. Again, remember, this is the local simulation environment, but it is just like the cloud. It's not the local IIS. And then there, the authentication should bounce me back. So let's see if I manage to be fast enough. Almost. So for a moment, you saw the address of the application, 127.0.0.1 port 81. And then, since I was not authenticated, I got bounced to this address, which is the address of the authority, of the STS. Here, I'm being authenticated. Remember, this is a test. And since I'm authenticated, as soon as I will hit ask, I will unfreeze the time and will land authenticated in the application. And voila, it worked. So as you can see here, I am Joe. And this is a representation of the token that I received. This one is another debugger component that you can download if you want to play with these things. So here I can see that I received a number of claims about my user. I know from where those claims are coming from. And if I wanted to write logic for processing this stuff, I can. I can do one entire session just on how to process these things. In fact, I did a 2 days workshop around. If you're interested in knowing all the details, just go on Channel 9 and spend 7 hours with my monotone voice blabbering about the same topic. That's your idea of fun. But here, I will not touch about this anymore. Just know that you can do excellent things with those data. Here, the message is, I had this application running outside of my infrastructure, but thanks to the fact that I used standards, I actually was able to reuse my local identities, which is remarkable. Also, note that this lag of a system still takes place within the boundaries of your enterprise. So you don't have to open any ports in your firewall for enabling this. In fact, in Microsoft, we have something like 30 to 50 new applications that we use for a level of business every month. And largely now all those go in Windows Azure. it's just easier. You, in Windows Azure, you go, you own basically your data center. You don't have to go in pilgrimage to the administrator and ask them, say, please, please host my application. Now, in Microsoft, it works like that. Or at least they probably discriminate me because, I don't know, I'm Italian, I have long hair. I don't know why. But anyway, with Windows Azure, you skip this entire thing and you just deploy that. But of course, since that's the level of business app, you need to open it to Microsoft employees. And all you need to do is actually add an entry for your application in our local ADFS. And at that point, your application is instantly available to all the people from the internet. And even when you are on the extranet, since we have proxies, we can use it. So this literally changed our way to do business, which is, if you ask me, pretty awesome. But then again, I'm biased. So let's make things slightly more interesting now. Let's delete the smile from the face of the guy, which becomes annoying after some time. And let's get rid of some of those guys. Okay, we have seen how this works when we have just one customer. That's all fine and dandy. However, what happens when we start making serious money and start selling our application to more than one? Now, in theory, not too much. Like, there shouldn't be big differences, but you never know. So let's actually see how it works. Let me make the font of this a bit less intrusive because it's taking way too much space. And you know, people think that I do this for being cool, like, oh, you use this technique. The reality is I don't like to do my slides. So I do it at the very last possible moment, which is pretty much now. Yes, that's true. We are lazy. Okay, so let's repeat what we did so far. Here, blue user land on the application. So the user is not authenticated. So what happens now? Gets redirected. Excellent. Where is redirected? The STS. The STS. That's a good guess. But I have two of them now. Which one? I'm sorry?
In its own domain.
In its own domain. Well, that's the intention. That's what we'd like him to do. But at this point, the user is not authenticated. So we know nothing about it. Imagine it to be in a very thick fog, and you see one hand that comes out like this and wants something from you, typically money. And you need to, how to say, give instructions saying, oh, no, I have to recognize you. You don't know anything about these hands. So here you meet for the first time, or probably not for some of you, with a problem of a home realm discovery. When I have more than one potential authority, I need to know where to redirect my user so that they can successfully authenticate. There are various solutions to these. They are all heuristics. There is not like a solution like if there is a theorem. Every time you know something about your problem, you will do a solution which somehow maps to that. However, the brute force solution in this is to just list all the potential sources to your user and hope that the user will pick the right one. Unfortunately, exact is not always the case. And early afternoon, I have a deep dive on the access control service. I will show a few other ways of solving the same problem. So let's assume that the user clicks on the right one. We come in here. And from now on, we know how it works. We get the token. We send the token. Good. Now let's do the same with a red customer. Red customer hits on the application. Not authenticated. What happens? Guys, you have to speak up. Gets rejected. Not authenticated. Yes. And what do we do then? Perfect. We show the list saying, where would you like to go today? Sounds familiar. And assuming that it picks the right one, comes in here, authenticates, wins the token, gets the token back, and here it is. Good. So this is still better than not having used any standard protocol, because this can happen fairly straightforwardly. However, those two tokens are of different color, which represents the fact that the information that you're getting there may be actually different. So imagine that one customer is from the US, the other customer is from another country. And let's say that the attributes that you are receiving, they are described by types that are different. So even if all the information is in there, like you have all you need to teach to your application how to tell one from the other and say that administratore means actually administrator and similar things. And of course, that's not very handy because now we have just two of them, but I know customers in Germany that have tens of thousands of partners. They are all coming from different places. They are all in different businesses. So you can expect various thousands of different types of tokens. So the logic for managing these, if you have to put it in that application, is a nightmare. Also, usually, you don't have just one application. You have a portfolio of applications. So you have to go everywhere and change these. No, we don't want that. But luckily, we don't have to, thanks to the fact that we have another architectural construct, which we call a federation provider, as opposed to the identity provider that we have seen before, that is still an STS, still in a web service which transforms tokens. Actually, that issues tokens. I gave away the end. But whereas the identity provider, the STS in here, is a facade on top of one existing store of users, it just abstracts away your ability to authenticate one user. So it's a facade on top of accounts. A federation provider is in reality something which sits at boundaries. It is something that can receive a token and process it and issue another token which is derived from the first one. Now, like I said, like this, it's fairly abstract. But the idea behind all this is you can use this new construct for decoupling your application from the sources from where you are getting your tokens and your users. So that, again, you restore the situation in which when you see the hand coming out from the fog asking for something, you know where to send them. You send them to this intermediary. And then it's the problem of the intermediary to figure out the home run discovery and various other issues that I'll mention later. And note that this is really an architectural pattern. That's not how to say, like there are products which support these, but this is a general idea, like you can apply it everywhere. So let me rewind the entire process in here. Let me clean up some of these lines. And now let's assume that our application, instead of trusting directly those identity providers, it trusts these intermediate. So let's do again the flow. First one, I'll do it, and the second one, I'll ask you to do it. So pay attention. Here I have my blue user, hits the application, not authenticated, but this time it's obvious where to go. There is only one option, and it is the intermediary. Here the intermediary will have to figure out how to solve the home run discovery problem. Hope, same thing. And here the user just clicks on his own, wins a token, and now this token actually goes to the intermediary. Because here, every time you do a chain, this chain can actually be longer than just two steps. Then when you solve it, you need to walk the chain back on the other steps. Like you can't just skip the steps and go straight to the app. Here, in the intermediary, you can actually have logic that will change this token according to whatever you want. So let's say that, for example, your application has two roles. The gold customer and the copper customer. And those are the two roles that your application understands. Then let's say that the organization here has its own roles, like administrator, janitor, and similar. And you don't want to, or you want, but they usually refuse. You cannot impose to them to also add your roles, gold and silver, because they are just for your app. So you can actually add this intelligence in the intermediary, so that in the intermediary, you can put the conditions, the business conditions that says, okay, those guys bought my service so that all of their administrators are in fact gold customers and all the janitor are copper customers. So that here you can make the logic, you can actually change this token. Let me represent that by making it green. And at that point, this token will be already in a format that your application can digest. So once your application gets this, you don't have to teach anything to Europe. You don't have to teach them what amministratore means, because it will be already expressed in terms of concepts it understands, gold, copper. Now, let's do the red one. Red customer lands on the application. What happens next? Redirected to the federation provider. If I'd have a prize, you would have won it. But unfortunately, I am poor, so I didn't. What happens now? List, perfect. You guys have to speak up. List, red user picks on its own, comes in here, and wins a token. Where does this token go? Federation provider, perfect. And here, I can apply logic, which may be different, because it's coming from a different place. So if I want to normalize, it will be different, because different input, but same outputs. But then the result is that, again, I have a green token, which I send back, and it comes here. Great. So now your application doesn't have to know anything. You can actually keep using the same format because I pushed out my logic, which can be really great when you have things like tens of thousands of patterns. And why did this happen? You don't have to write these from scratch. We have various products which support this functionality, but the one that I would like to mention to you is the access control service. The access control service is a part of a Windows Azure platform. It is substantially a federation provider for rent. You go to the access control service, you choose one namespace, basically just means one address, and at that address, the system will host endpoints which behave like the federation provider that I just described. And you will have a chance of describing how you want this endpoint to process and transform tokens so that you can do exactly what I've done now. The access control service also have other interesting properties, like it really tries to help you in the sign-on operation and in various other things. But for the time being, just think of that in these terms. It is a federation provider that gives you a chance of determining your own transformation logic. Thank you for being here. I'm all ears.
The federation provider, you said it transforms the token it gets, like the role administrator gets transformed to gold customer. But that actually means it has logic, it has knowledge of the application. And the application uses gold customer, so now the federation provider needs to know those kind of things. If you connect another application to it, maybe you have to provide that logic to it, and then I think that's a problem.
So let me try to summarize. The question is, actually, first statement. Statement is the federation provider needs to know about the applications to which it issues token for. And if I have more than one application, then I have to specify more logic. Is that correct?
Yeah.
That is absolutely correct. And I wouldn't say it's a problem. Actually, think if you wouldn't have this point, you'd have to do it at every application. Here, of course, you need to know about the app because for security reasons, you never send a token for a destination that is unknown. That's to say that even if you would not put any claims in that, you would just give the empty token. Whenever you receive a request, the request says, I want a token with this format for that destination. So you need to know that. And also, at this point, that's the only place where you put this logic. Whereas if you would have only the applications to put that logic to, you would denormalize that. Because imagine that you have more than one of those applications, but, for example, the same customer. And there is a discount, and for them, you are applying the same mapping for everybody. Now you have one single point when you put all those rules. Instead of going to every application and applying this, and when the promotion ends, go in there and change all of that. So you still need to do the work, but at least now you do the least possible amount of work. Then you can be especially unlucky, and the least amount of work is the same as the maximum amount of work. But here is the curve. There is always here, like Murphy likes to remind us. Great. And now, since this is a very, very abstract, let me actually show it. So, let me go to the portal of the access control service. The basic way of interacting with the access control service is through a portal which lives in Windows Azure. And of course, if you come this afternoon, be warned that I will have to go through some of these again, even if it's a deep dive. So please don't be disappointed. Here, I'm actually using my ADFS in Microsoft because my account in Windows Azure is my account as Microsoft employee. And so when I try to access there, I get bounced to my ADFS, and now I can use my credentials. So that's pretty handy. And since, unfortunately, my brain does not allow me to do more than one thing at once, if I type, I cannot speak. So for your relief, I'll be shutting up for a moment. Yeah, that wasn't too bad. I could have still made it wrong, so I may have to do it again. But for once, I didn't. So what you see here is the management portal of the access control service. It is already hosted in this thing which I called a namespace. I actually have various endpoints which always start with the same address, which is this one. And depending on the address, they will do a different function. In this case, they render HTML so that I can manage. In the other case, like for example, the STS, they actually expose a federation provider so that I can hit it programmatically and transform stuff. In this case, here I have my list of identity providers. Those are the identity providers that from my access control service point I am trusting. In this moment, I'm trusting just this one, which is the same endpoint which I connected to before here. So if now I would connect my application to the access control service, I would see nearly no differences. That's to say that since it's trusting only one, I wouldn't just adding one step. And in fact, why don't I do that? For integrating my application with the access control service, I use exactly the same procedure as before. That's the beauty of using service orientation, because the contract is the same. This is one STS. Only thing I need to do is provide the address of the metadata which describes that contract. So I come back here, right-click, add STS reference. I go through this again. This time I add the address of my access control service endpoint. I wait for a moment that it reads it. And voila, my application is now tied to that endpoint. So now when I hit F5, I'm going to do one extra step, but you guys are not going to see anything, because since it's clear from the context to which identity provider I have to speak to, the ACS is not going to ask us anything. It's just going to send me back, make my, my integration, and that's it. And as you can see, I'm still Joe as before. But here you'll see some little differences. And the differences here are, I have the same, I have the same claims that I had before, but this time the issuer is the access control service. And on the other hand, here, I have one extra claim, which tells me from where originally those claims are coming from. So that now if I have some special logic that I want to do for differentiating between identity providers, I can. So far, not much value. Like I could have made some changes, but that's it. Now let's say that I want to add another identity provider. Let me start the new identity provider, which is another instance of my little utility. Okay. Here it's as easy as going into identity providers, hitting add. Here I have various flavors of identity provider that I can refer to. In this case, I'm using a business identity provider, so I want this endpoint. However, if I wanted to add some web identity provider, which are so en vogue recently, I can. That's pretty straightforward. And I'll show it to you in the next step, like after this specific demo. Here I can just hit next. Let me call this entry organization 2. And now I'm doing the same thing that I did before when I did add STS reference, with the only difference that I'm actually going to pick a file since I'm not on the internet. So I'm uploading the file. Okay. And at this point, as soon as I add, I see it for the question that I got before about the application. Here, I have only one application listed in my namespace, but if I would have more than one, I could say this identity provider applies to this one, but not to this other. So I have complete control over where this stuff works for. As soon as I hit save, the access control service creates a new entry for that, and now I'm there. For the next thing I need to do is to go into the rules. The rules are the way that you use for teaching to your federation provider how to transform your tokens. Those are very simple rules, very straightforward. Perhaps in the future we'll add more complicated stuff, but for the time being, that's more than enough for what we hear from customers. And I already have rules which refer to Organization 1. I want to add something for Organization 2. Since I don't want to do any complicated logic, the Access Control Service offers me a functionality of generating pass-through rules. Let's say that for all the claims that I'm receiving in input, I can create a rule for putting the same claims in output so that I don't do any transformation. Let's say generate. And that's it. That's a godsend for demos before I had to create the rules one by one. That wasn't fun. Good. Now I added my new identity provider. I can come back to my app. Note that I didn't change anything. I hit F5. I crank the APC a bit. And then what happens is that I'm going to be redirected to my access control service again. But this time, what's going to happen? Too late. It appeared. So you are disqualified. I'm sorry. I get a list because now it's no longer obvious from the context where I'm coming from. So I can pick between Organization 1 and Organization 2. And I'm going to get Organization 2. And back and forth, here I am. And as I like to say here, I'm not in Kansas anymore. This is clearly not Joe. This is Xiao. Any of you guys speaks Mandarin? Well, I don't. I clearly don't. And if I look inside the token, I see a couple of interesting values. For example, as group, instead of administrator, I now have this thing that I cannot pronounce. But I can tell you, because I wrote, and it's on the marketplace. It's for free, so I don't have to do on. I'm not doing undue use of my stage. I wrote a translator between English and Chinese. I know nothing about Chinese, but there is this public database, and I just wrote an index on top of it. And in fact, people complain that it doesn't work too well, but anyway, it works well enough to know that that thing means administrator. So now, normally, I would have to go to my application and teach to it the same. And this is just one of the many potential things that I can get. And of course, I'm not crazy about it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to copy this. I'm going to go back to my ACS. And I'm going to modify the pass-through rule for Organization 2 group. I could add another rule, but let me modify that. It's simpler. So here, there's the rule. The rule says, if I'm getting a claim from Organization 2 and the type of the input claim is group, then I want to, right now, issue exactly the same claim type. As you can see here, pass through. Now, I want to change this. I want to tell to ACS that when it sees that value, I want to see on my application administrator. So I will say that I want to emit one claim of type group. Ah, wait. Here I forgot to say, and the value is this. Otherwise, it wouldn't trigger. And here, I want to emit the value administrator. So in summary, if you see token coming from organization 2 containing a claim of type group, containing a value something. Thank you for understanding. Then emit another claim still of type group, but with value administrator. And here let me put a descriptive thing for the rule. That's clear what it does, right? I saved it. And then let me close this thing. Come back in Visual Studio. Once again, I didn't change anything. Hit F5. Crank our local environment. And then we'll just go back and forth, get again the list, but this time, since it remembers that last time we made this option, it just shows us this instead of showing everything. So a little attempt to help the user to put on Rails instead of letting them to themselves. And now, I am still Xiao, as you can see here, so I'm hitting the right identity provider, but with my great relief, I'm now receiving the claim group administrator. So at that point, I took all that logic and I put it in there. And so now all my applications can benefit from this instead of going everywhere and doing all the same thing, which personally I find pretty awesome. Okay. So we have seen this. Let me grab some of those things that will be handy in the next slide. And now let's move to a more trendy topic. Let's say that your user is not like before a boring business user, but some cool kid with a goatee, perhaps a little hat, San Francisco, of course, which would play startups, Web 2.0 and similar, so would probably not come from a directory, but come from all those guys, web providers. And now let's say that for some reason you want to cater to this audience as well. It's not up to me to judge you if you want to do that. And of course, you want to change as little as possible of your application. How do you do that? Well, that's pretty straightforward. Here, let's say that your user has the usual browser. Lands on your application just like before, gets redirected to your access control service endpoint just like before. Now, if you configured your access control service to trust those web identity providers, now here in the choices, you will actually get them. And you can get them alongside with the business ones. Here, I'm keeping them separated just for clarity, but nothing prevents you from using both at the same time. And now here, there is the interesting part. Yahoo and Google, those are details that as developers, you don't need to know, but I'm telling you just for your culture. Yahoo and Google use OpenID. They don't use this red protocol that I'm using, which, by the way, is AWS Federation. Live is doing its own thing. And Facebook, on Tuesdays, like to use Facebook Connect. On Wednesdays, it will use OAuth 2.0, and similar. Now, I am exaggerating a bit, but in the last few months, Facebook changed the protocol at least twice. And so, of course, those are details, implementation details, but they can actually break your code. So now, how can we actually go through this? Well, the good news is, the access control service contains the necessary intelligence for actually engaging with the correct protocol with those guys. So that from your user and for you developer, nothing changes. The user just hits on which one do you want me to use? Google. I heard Google. So contains the necessary intelligence to actually use, in this case, OpenID, since we are going to Google. Here, Google will take control of the experience, will show the authentication UI, will give the user a chance to authenticate and get back a token or equivalent. This token will be sent to the access control service, and you already guessed what happens. Oh, wow, this is wet. That's very worrying. This is the only PC I have, so let's not make it explode before the day is over. And this token gets transformed in the usual green token, which could be completely different format. Like, for example, OpenID uses its own format, and instead of this one can be SAML, exactly like before. It can contain exactly the same stuff as before, because you could have described these using rules, and then you can bounce this back. And for your application, this is exactly the same as before. You didn't have to do anything different from usual. Again, that's great. And I mentioned this thing about Facebook changing protocols, not by chance. I just want to make the point that thanks to the fact that the access control service decouples you from these details, our customers didn't even know that this change occurred. Let's say that it was our responsibility as the developers and managers and maintainers of the access control to actually stay up with their changes and change our implementation accordingly, so that there was no disruption on your side, and we had to write all that boring protocol-level code, which otherwise would have been on your back. And in fact, this pattern goes under the name of protocol transition. Now, all this stuff is pretty nice. However, think what just happened. How many people can authenticate with Google? No, okay. I apologize. What I meant is how many millions of people are actually able to display that ability. Like, what did I prove? That I can read and write and I have a connection. That's it. So there is not a lot of value in authentication per se in this scenario. Whereas if I'm coming from, I don't know, Toyota, Microsoft, or any other company, then I'm proving at least something that has business value. I am an employee of that company. Instead here, I'm just proving that I know how to authenticate with Google for that specific name. So when you use this thing, usually you actually need to go one step further. Let's say that you need to invite specific people. Here, the thing is a bit subtle. When you have claims, you can always receive a description of a user with all the information that you need. Like, for example, if I just needed to know that you are a Gold customer, I don't need to actually say that it's you. You and your colleague that are Gold, for me, are exactly the same user. So that's the magic of claims. I don't have to do provisioning, which is a big pain. And that's really great. But when you come back to these kind of things, you must do provisioning, because you are not proving anything by saying, here I have my live ID, here I have Google. So typically, why do you want to use this thing? First, for including in your system people that are not part of a directory. So let's say that you have this application and there is a consultant which is working with your customer. This consultant is not in their directory, but you need to authenticate him or her anyway. And so what you can do is send them an email with one invitation link so that you can verify that they are the owner of that email. And then in that link, you can actually do a tie between one account that they decide to use and the profile that you already have of this person. So the only thing that you are doing, and please ask me questions if you don't get this point, because it's a very important point, the only thing that you are doing is outsourcing, checking and maintaining username and password. So now it's Google's problem to do that. But what is my responsibility is to take that specific account and tie that to the person that I want to use. And the email verification is just one of the tricks that I can use. The other thing that I can use this for is for self-provisioning of users. I want to remember returning users. And so when they come in, instead of asking them to create a new account, a new username and password, which statistics show if you do that, something like the 85% of the people will just turn their back and never come back, because creating an account, honestly, is a pain, again. Instead, if you give them the chance to reuse an existing account, they are much happier. And at that case, you use that because from that moment on, that user becomes important to you, because it becomes a returning user. So the moment in which they do a sign up, you can create a profile and then dehydrate that profile every time it comes in. Yes, sir? The question is, do you create your users in your database or do you create a rule for the group? That's an excellent question. You decide. You can do both. And the sample that I'm going to show you I actually have my own local database, and all I'm doing is tying the unique identifier that I get on a token with my local database. However, it is perfectly possible to use the APIs of the access control service to create a rule that says, if you see this identifier, then add those roles that I want to assign to the consultant. So both approaches are possible. How you do that depends on the problem that you're trying to solve. Like if you have a portfolio of applications, you'll probably like to put everything in the access control service. If you have one app and you have like this profile is big, so shuffling it around in the form of token may be costly, then you probably want to keep it close to the application. So trade-off. Yes, sir. Then the question is, how many rules can you have? Well, I actually don't know the numbers. I can find them out. But using these in a user repository wouldn't be a very good idea if you are in the millions. But to say that this thing is an engine for transforming tokens. You can use it for doing things like that in the case in which your main users are the one in the directory and you add some of them here and there. But if you want to create one entire system, then this thing is not made to be an identity provider. So those are still rules, not entries. Like it's not a directory. So you can do it, but beyond a certain number can be an overstretch. And I can find out the specific limits. OK, so let me actually show you a little example. At the very end of the day, for the ones of you that will still be functioning at the time, I'll do one entire session about this guy. And it's not going to be just identity. So here I'll glide over the details. Later, instead, I'll just poke this thing in the eye. And this is actually one little sample that you can find directly on the internet. If you go to Fabricam Shipping, here there is a series of links to source code that you can download and a live instance of this application, which is running on Windows Azure. This application is a shipping app, which is sold as a service. And as a customer, I can come to this website and sign up for an instance of this application, and the system will automatically provision that. Of course, it's all make-believe, but it's fairly realistic. And here, I just want to show you what happens when I use the small business system, which actually is using the mechanics that I described, the one in which you describe your users. But then, instead of using username and password, you allow them to reconcile whatever account they have in your system, exactly the email verification system that I described. So let's go and pick the small business, Windows Live ID. Ignore all these things for a moment. Again, here I'll glide over the details that are not identity related. If you are interested, you can come later. So here I have my step where I can, as administrator of this soon-to-be-created instance, I can create my list of users. So let's say that I have myself, and I want to give to myself all possible powers. And I'm adding all those details that I know I cannot obtain from other identity providers, such as, for example, Live ID, Facebook, or similar. Facebook doesn't know which roles I'm supposed to have in here, doesn't know my phone number. Actually, they know. My nephews actually write everything on Facebook. Eventually, we are going to learn. But anyway, in general, you cannot expect to receive all the information that you need from there. So you describe it in here. And here I can add this user as new, and then I can add another user from Google just for showing you that it works across platforms. Hit next. And when I hit subscribe, my system is going to create a new instance of this system. And among the various things it will do, it will also send notification mails to all the people that I invited. And it's done already. In fact, as you can see here, this step is one of the steps that I use when I do my deployment. Again, if you're interested in the details, come at the session tonight. OK, so let's now go to the Hotmail of one of those users so we can see how this worked. But let me start with a fresh browser. Hotmail. Adam. Okay, here I received two emails. One is, since I'm the administrator of a new instance, is the notification. But the other is the invite for activating my account at this instance. So let me click on it. Here I have this address, which just shows that I'm using MVC. That is one action, my activation action. And here there is one ticket, which I generated specifically for the record that I described. So that now, if the user clicks here, I will have proof that they are the one who received that email at that address. And we do that. At this point, we will present them with all the options that they have for associating one account of those providers with the account in this new instance. So let's choose Live ID. At this point, the system is taking that record, getting the unique token identifier, putting them together, and from now on, I can use that Live ID for signing in my new instance. So now I'm actually using those providers, but I'm actually getting that specific user, not just any Live ID user. And of course, this, usually works also with Google. One of the other users was in Google. So here I'm going in Gmail. I got the same email, of course, a different ticket. So here I'm verifying that the address is correct. Here I'm associating my Google account. And from now on, I can access the same instance as before, but also with a Google account, which is pretty handy. Yep, the internet resisted. So it just have to resist for another 10 minutes, and then we can call it a victory. Okay, so we have seen how to automate the sign up. And of course, just to reiterate the thing that I said before, this thing is really not made for people with long hair, let me tell you. I apologize for being a hippie. And just a second. Here, you didn't see the code which actually made this thing happen. But in this case, I actually added entries to one database in SQL Azure. I could have just as well, instead of using the logic for doing that, call the ACS management APIs that are just OData APIs and created rules specifically for that. Yes, sir? The question is, I can use two accounts to log in. Now, here you have an artifact of a demo that it's me doing both, but you have to imagine that those would be two people receiving two emails into different points. Like, let's say I'm a small entrepreneur, not that small, unfortunately. And I have two employees. One, I know that his address is Adam Carter Hotmail. The other is John Doe Gmail. And so I'm creating these for my company because I want to have a shipment portal. And when it's the moment, I add them so that they receive two invitations. Independently, they register. And so at this point, they can go to the same instance, even if they're coming from different places. So the question is, can the user use multiple accounts to get in the same place? And technically, yes, it's possible. In this sample, I didn't do it because it's already hard to explain as it is. And if I would have added also these, people would have committed suicide or equivalent. But from a technical perspective, you can absolutely do. Like, here we have a logic that as soon as you use that ticket, then we kill it so that nobody can ever redo it. Like if I forward you that email, you can't get another user in there, but nothing prevents you from changing the logic of that thing and not doing that. Does that help?
Yeah, but can you do that in the access control service, or do you have to take care of that in your own application?
The question is, does the ACS do that for you, or do you take care of that in your application? You do that in both cases. Let's say that whether you use the management APIs of ACS, or you do this on your local database, that's logic that you write yourself. So it's, how to say, you have a platform, and you can do whatever with that, but there is nothing automatic in the things that you have seen there. Like, there is a logic that I had to write, and for the email that gets sent, I had to subscribe to one email provider, and just this morning I got the notification that I just paid, $30. So the platform allows you to do that, but you have to add something. Great. So for the phone, since we have just a few minutes left, I will not build the slide for you, but I will actually show you how it works. Here I have the end solution of one hands-on lab. If you download the Identity Training Kit or the Windows Azure Training Kit, you will find a new lab that we introduced in April, which shows you how to use the access control service with the Windows Phone 7 applications. And here we use an interesting trick. Since the providers that we have seen before do not allow you to authenticate using anything but a browser, then what we are doing is we are actually hosting a little browser in our application, and we are using these for acquiring tokens and transforming them in tokens that we can use for REST web services calls. And then our application has this component which allows you to do a sign-in, and then it uses the resulting token for making calls to REST services. So that's pretty interesting code, but just for showing you how it works, let me hit play. And this thing will take some time, but how many of you guys are interested in building REST web services? Okay. That's just for my personal knowledge. I've been asking this question for the last 3 years, and hands have been steadily getting more and more people interested in that. Okay, let me start my little app. So here the system sees that I didn't save a token in my local storage. And so it knows that I have to authenticate. For getting this list, it actually reached out to the access control service and received back a JSON element which contains all the identity provider that I own so that I can create whatever experience I want. That's the same thing that I've done with a Fabricam shipping application. You have seen that I was using the colors of my application, the look and feel and similar. That's all because the page that I've shown at the very beginning, the white and blue one, the very basic with org 1 and org 2, it's just there for debugging purposes, but you don't have to use that. Like you can integrate and manipulate the experience as much as you want, as we are doing here. So let me use Live ID. Unfortunately, the experience here is not awesome because, as you can see, the browser is not exactly big. But unfortunately, here we have no choice in the matter because the identity providers allow you to do this only through the browser, so there's not much that we can do. So let me say Adam Carter. And here you'll see my super secret password. I'm doomed. No, Adam is doomed, luckily. And now I went, I got my token, I got it back, I extracted it from the browser, and now I'm using the token for calling an OData service, which is giving me this list. And this list is just for my user. If I would have used another user, of course, I would have gotten another list. And if you look at the code here, you'll see how to do REST web services, which is pretty nice. Good. So now that I more or less did my deck, we can start over, but we can skip this thing. Let's start from here. We have seen how, starting from an on-premise application, this was a known territory, but we use our knowledge of infrastructure there, and so we just take advantage of that. However, as soon as we move out, that's pretty hard. And so we have seen how, using some service orientation, hence claims-based identity, we were able to project our existing identities outside of the boundaries of our internet, and if you're lucky, you get a cookie out of it. We have seen a little demo of how to use the extension that WF brings to your Visual Studio, add STS reference, very straightforward, very simple. Then we have seen what happens when we start adding multiple customers or partners, and we have seen how this introduces the problem of the home RAM discovery. And we have seen how it's pretty easy from the access control service to handle that and even to do things like normalization. Remember, Chinese string to administrator. Then here we have seen how we can do a protocol transition, in which even if a provider that you are using a protocol which is different from the protocol that you support in your application, piece of cake. Thanks to the fact that you have a Bayes decoupler, you can actually go there and do the job. And we have also seen how to use this information for actually provisioning users. And we have seen one example of an email flow. And then we have seen the phone, but not really in the protocol details. And in all these, as we have seen, basically I've always used this green token thing. That's to say that thanks to the fact that I started using a claims-based identity at the very beginning, everything else fell into place. Like I went from classic monolithic enterprise application all the way to phone and social providers, and I basically never changed the code. Like you have seen me go in Visual Studio, but I never typed a single thing in Visual Studio. And of course, if you look at these, all this stuff all at once, it can be scary, but we have seen that if you have the right method and if you use the correct tools of the platform, it's going to be a good day. Thank you. I'll hang around, but I'll free the thing for the next speaker.